Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. So, doomed, pushed on the subway track, this man is about to die. You saw that headline and the picture on the New York Post. You've probably been talking about it. A man, as they say, pushed onto the tracks, struggling to get out as a train barrels down on him. We now know that seconds after the photograph was taken, Kisu Khan was struck and killed. Maybe you found the cover horrific, sickening, haunting. Maybe you thought it was par for the course in the New York tabloid wars. It's not unbelievable that you would think both those things are true. Horrific and unsurprising was one, I think, apt description. And at the very least, it raises many questions. Why did the photographer do nothing? Where are the other people trying to help this man? What do I do if I fall into the subway tracks? We'll talk about it with two guests. Tom McGivern is editor of Capital New York, former editor at The Observer. He watches the New York tabloid wars every morning. Tom, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. In a minute, we'll talk with WNYC transportation reporter Jim O'Grady. He's been looking at some of the basic questions about subway safety, and the phones are open for your reactions, whether you want to talk about your reaction to the Post cover photo, or if you have a question about what to do if you fall or get pushed onto the tracks. Our number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Tom, I think your reaction has been evolving, perhaps as more is learned about the photo. But take us through it. Take us through what your first gut reaction was and what you're thinking about it now.
Well, I mean, I just think we didn't know yesterday an awful lot about what was actually going on the platform. We know a lot more today. And, you know, I think a lot of the sort of most prominent reaction, I don't know if it's the most prevalent one, but, you know, Al Roker and a few other people on television, Anderson Cooper saying, why did this photographer do nothing? And today, you know, he's made his own case for that in the New York Post, and also the New York Times interviewed him and, you know, took a tour of the subway platform with him so he could recreate what happened. It seems pretty clear to me that he has been a little bit unfairly maligned. It's pretty clear from what he said that there wasn't much more he could do than he did. And I think also you have to remember that, according to his account of it, at any rate, you know, when he actually did arrive where this man had been hit by the train, he was very closely involved with the doctor who was there and trying to help the guy out. And even himself was swatting away other people who were trying to take cell phone pictures of it.
Yeah.
In other words, as soon as he had something he could do, he wasn't taking pictures anymore.
The photographer the photographer was R. Umar Abbasi, and even in the original Post story, so for Anderson Cooper and Al Roker to question it, the story was only, you know, 1,000 words. They could have read it. A lot of Abbasi's explanation is there, how he was taking photographs to try to warn the driver, and I'm going to get Tom to, your evolving take on it, but let's just hear, since this is what we were talking about, let's just hear Abbasi on the Today Show. The clip starts with a question from Matt Lauer.
There was no time just before that photo that you think, how tall are you?
I am 5'10".
5'10". Do you think you had the strength or the possibility or the opportunity to help him get out of those tracks?
No, this is a frozen moment. There's a train approaching from where the train is to where Mr. Han is a second. I am further away.
When you think about it now, is there something you would have done differently, Mr. Abbasi?
If this thing happened again with the same circumstances, whether I had a camera or not and I was running towards it, there is no way I could have rescued Mr. Han. What really surprises me is the people who were maybe 100 feet or 150 feet away from Mr. Han, they did not reach out to help him.
Tom McGivern, any reaction to that, even to Matt Lauer's questioning? I guess you could see it as prosecutorial, or you could see it as channeling as a good journalist does, channeling the interests of his viewers. What do you think?
Well, Well, it's a legitimate question. Yeah. I mean, this was a big fulcrum point of people's criticism of the photograph yesterday. There's a separate question, I think, which is, was the New York Post right to publish it, and were they right to publish it on the front page, and did they do it sensitively? But as far as this question goes, you know, I think it's on the one hand, it's resolved, but on the other hand, the publication of this photo is really the thing that prompted the conversation about whether people in New York do enough to help other people who are in dangerous situations when they can't intervene. And one thing this photographer points out is that there were people who were quite close to him. He says in his piece today in the New York Post, you know, after the man was hit by the train, there were people trying to help him, and there were other people crowding in trying to take pictures of him with their cell phones. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of the Kitty Genovese story, which really, you know, it was a horrific story, and it didn't involve a photograph like this, but it made people really ask themselves whether, you know, we're a city of people that's willing to help each other when there's a tragedy.
Yeah, though Kitty Genovese, I think, was a useful discussion point, but there's a great On the Media segment from a few years ago where they really got into it and discredited a lot of the mythology about the Kitty Genovese story.
I think that's true. But in terms of the conversation that was engendered, there are some similarities here. You know, in that case, it was, turns out to have been maybe not, you know, not the most legitimate version of the story, but it resonated with a lot of people for, you know, the truthfulness of, about people being willing to get involved in, quote, you know, when something is happening right next to them.
Chris in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Chris. Go ahead.
For all the criticism that the New York Post receives, I'd say publishing this photo actually allows for these type of discussions and changing the public discourse on how to act when you're found in these situations. And also, to the credit of the photographer, you know, there were a bunch of other people that didn't do anything either that stood there. He just happened to be someone that filmed it and that shot the photo. And whether he shot the photo or not, the outcome would have remained the same. He would have been standing there unable to help. So I think that the Post publishing the photo actually does more to engage this type of discussion in the public space and, you know, potentially changing how we interact with this.
Thanks for the call, Chris. And Tom, you said there are three issues here. Should they have published it? Should they have published it on the front page? And were the words around it sensitive? We'll get into that. I think Kevin from Brooklyn wants to weigh in on some of these issues. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go right ahead, Kevin.
I think it's not surprising that the Post put it out. It's an amazing picture, and it did capture that moment. I thought it was insensitive, but I have to say, I saw it on the Huffington Post, and as soon as they talked about it, I went to their website and looked at the picture, and that's, you know, they're driving ratings, and it was an amazing photo. I mean, it was a horrible photo and probably shouldn't have been published, but at the same time, it's like watching a train wreck, literally.
Yeah. So there, Kevin, there, and I'll throw it to you, Tom, now. Kevin says shouldn't have been published. Other callers say, you said, you know, started a discussion. And then there's how they contextualize it. Let me just take a part of that with my own opinion. Totally insensitive. Doomed, reveling in death. And couldn't it have had the same impact, I ask rhetorically, not that the Post and I have the same editorial sensibilities, if they had sort of framed it as this man's about to die and the perpetrator who pushed him on the tracks is still at large. Sort of a call to justice. It just, I think, would have played a little differently. But what's your take on all that?
Well, I mean, one question that a friend of mine was asking me yesterday was, do you think that people who are outraged by the publication of this photo would have been outraged if the same photo were contextualized more as, you know, this man spent 22 seconds in the track bed with a train approaching and nobody on the platform helped him?
Yeah.
And then really what this photo would have dramatized was this situation that is in fact what we've ended up talking about as a result of the publication of the photo, as opposed to just, like you say, this sort of faces of death, terrible, gory thing, which it was pointed out today, I mean, self-servingly by the Daily News, actually, and this is another thing we learned today, actually really did terribly upset the man's family. They were shocked to see the photo, it turns out. You know, there, even though they interviewed the victim's wife for an article in the newspaper, they didn't tell her anything about the photo that they had or their plans to publish it or put it on the front page. So I think that has to be an element in this conversation about whether they were right to do it.
Yeah, and I do notice that the headline that I proffered calling a call to action to catch the perpetrator, or the one you talked about pointing the finger at those who didn't help, that's actually more editorializing than what they ran. What they ran were facts that he was pushed on the subway track and about to die, and we normally say that newspapers should, you know, especially tabloids, are better when they stick to the facts than the editorializing. I think that just something to note. Susie from Millwood in Westchester. Go ahead, Susie.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, because I literally lost sleep over this last night, because I don't think enough people know that there's area under the lip of the platform, and if, God forbid, you end up on the tracks, you can squeeze under the platform lip and perhaps escape the fate that this poor man did. And I know this just because I grew up riding the subways my whole life, but if he didn't grow up knowing that, you know, if he had only known that he probably could have fit under the lip of the platform,
well,
he might still be alive today.
Susie, I'm going to ask you to hold on, and we're going to bring in Jim O'Grady, who's WNYC's transportation reporter. And Jim, you have some information about this exact point.
Well, that may be the case in some subway stations, that there's room under the lip of the track, but the stations vary greatly throughout the system. It's important to remember that the subway system is more than 100 years old. It was built over decades. There are elevated portions, underground portions, obviously, different kinds of lines. There's the IRT, the IND. Stations and roadbeds, as they're called, the tracks, differ a great deal. So some stations, there may be room to hide under the lip of the platform. Some stations, there are not. There's no hard and fast rule about that.
And thanks for the call, Susie. So what are the strategies if you're in this situation, you're on the tracks, Jim?
Firstly, I asked the MTA that question, and their official response is to have no position on this except to say, stay away from the edge of the platform. If you drop an item on the track, don't jump down. Contact a transit authority worker. There are customer assistance buttons and help point devices, those glowing blue things. Do something like that rather than go down on the track yourself. But beyond that, the MTA doesn't want to say.
Well, that doesn't help. That wouldn't have helped this guy who was pushed onto the tracks and didn't reach down and didn't do anything wrong except get pushed.
Yeah. You're right. So the MTA won't come up with any sort of policy or recommendation. There are theories about what of course, the main thing is try to get back on the platform. It helps if there are people to pull you up. One much-discussed option is to move away from the tunnel through which the train is about to enter the station. That gives the motorman more time to brake. The trains do have an emergency brake, and if the motorman sees you and or is signaled about you moving down the platform, the platforms are average about 600 feet, moving away from the train could increase your odds of survival. If you get past the platform, there is either a ladder or a stair for workers to get back up on the platform. But, you know, when I brought this up with an MTA spokesman yesterday, he said, what if you trip?
Yeah.
The implication being, if we were to recommend doing that and a person were to trip and die anyway, we could be blamed for giving bad advice.
And what about ducking in the tracks themselves with the hero who saved lives by jumping on a man in the subway? Can you do that in all instances?
Yeah. Wesley Autry, subway hero from 2007, he did that on the one train stop at 137th Street. A young man had a seizure, fell on the track bed. He jumped down and with no time to spare covered that young man and allowed the train to go over him. And it just so happened at that IRT stop, there was that configuration in the track bed that worked. And reportedly, there was grease on his cap when he got up. The clearance was just enough. But again, that's not always the case in every station and every track bed around the system.
Sometimes there's a lip, sometimes there's a divot, and sometimes there's nothing. Raymond from South Orange, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling, Raymond.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. I wanted to mention that about 8 months ago, I was in Lincoln Center, and a man jumped off the side of the station and started to cross about four layers of track to the other side. And you could hear a train coming in the distance. When he got to the other side, he was trying to pull himself out. There were 15 or 20 people over there, and no one did a single thing. So I started screaming at them, pull the guy out.
Yeah.
And finally, after about 15 seconds, two guys went, grabbed his hands, and pulled him out. But apparently nobody sitting there had any concept or cared about what was going on or understood what the potential threat or situation was. It was just unbelievably amazing to me that you could see this scene and nobody
reacted at all. You're certain that everyone else saw it, and until you yelled, they didn't help them.
Yes, yes.
Well, thanks.
Yes, only myself reacted to it, of all the people there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Raymond. Does the MTA have a hands-off policy with this? Do they tell people not to help others who've fallen onto the track?
They don't say one way or the other. Other things that people have raised are there are setbacks sometimes in the walls that you can see track workers sometimes take shelter in. One thing you should be aware of, if you're in a station, look to the wall, and you might see alternating diagonal red and white stripes, a band of those. That means no clearance. And what that means is if you stand here, there won't be enough space for you to survive when the train goes by. That's for the track workers, and it's just something for people to know. There's also sometimes space between the tracks in a larger station, but usually to get to that space, you have to cross over the third rail. And third rails have something called a protection board over them. Those are not designed to hold the weight of a human body. They're just meant to keep debris and things that drip off the third rail. So, again, it's risky. There's basically no good option. You'd be choosing from among several bad options.
Standing in between the areas where if there are two trains that are passing, there's an area where they won't hit each other. Can a person fit in that area?
In some cases, yes. But you'll be dealing with the third rail. You need to be careful of that.
Do we know how many people die in a subway every year?
In 2010, 127 people were struck by subway trains. 51 were killed. Last year, 146 people were struck by subway trains. 47 were killed. I understand that 50 is about average for the past several years, so roughly one a week are killed.
Right. We have, I think, what, 8 million riders a day in the subway?
At least that.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. And how does it compare to other subways? Is it less safe? Are there other things that I know that the AirTran has a little plastic or glass protective barrier before you get on that at JFK. So these are two questions. Do you know how it compares to other subway systems, and are we at the vanguard of safety?
I don't know how it compares to other subway systems. I know that obviously by the numbers, a minuscule amount of people who take the subway end up getting hit by trains or killed by trains.
Right.
The metro systems in Paris and Tokyo have many stations with these glass sliding doors like the AirTran. A year ago, the MTA floated the idea of looking for requests for proposals to add them to certain stations, heavily trafficked stations. It was not well received, and I asked an MTA spokesman if there's a plans for this, and he said, right now, those plans are dead. There's nothing on the boards right now.
Well, you mentioned Wesley Autry, hailed by President Bush as a hero, rightly so. Laurie from the Upper East Side, I want to just go out on a note of hopefulness and not despair. And Laurie, can you deliver that note?
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Hi. In 1975, my uncle, Everett Sanderson, was standing on the platform of 86th Street at the 6th stop downtown, and a little girl, the gentleman who screened the call, she was 8, but I just checked with my mother, she was 6,
okay.
And she was Puerto Rican with her mom, and she was spinning around and somehow lost her mother's hand, fell onto the tracks, and the 6th train was coming, and my uncle said everybody just stood there. And I think what happens is people get into shock. I think that's what happens. And the mother was frozen like a statue, he said, and the train was coming, and the little girl was looking. Now, he couldn't reach her. He tried to grab her, but she was too low. So he jumped down, and he picked her up, and he was called a hero. Mayor Beam gave him a Medal of Honor, and the MTA let him ride for free for the rest of his life.
That's cool. Say your uncle's name.
Everett Sanderson. It was 1975.
Thanks so much, Laurie.
Thank you.
Tom, That's a good note to end on. Any final thoughts? I mean, this is the kind of discussion that we've been saying that the picture, no matter how it was presented, engendered.
Yes, I mean, I think one thing for us to think about here is, as Jim was just saying, I mean, if it's about 150 a year, one a week, that means that we've had almost 50 of these events happen in the city subway system just since the beginning of this year, and I'm not aware that we've had this conversation yet. So I think one thing we sort of have to wonder is whether the photo and the dramatic circumstances of this particular event are one of the reasons we're talking about it at all.
Tom McGavran, editor of Capital New York. He writes about the New York City tabloid wars. And Jim O'Grady, who covers transportation for WNYC. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
In a moment, a proposed new soccer stadium, or football, to many of the denizens of Queens, is being proposed. We'll discuss it with a spokesman from Major League Soccer. Stick around.